Welcome to the GMBM podcast. It's a special one that I've been looking forward to a lot because I'm here with Niels Amelinks. Niels, how are you?
Yeah, great, thank you. That's the one. Got the pronunciation just right.
Yeah, I'm struggling. First off, I'm struggling with your surname. I really am. What did you say? It's a bit like Eddie Merckx.
Yeah.
Because it's Belgian, right?
Yeah, correct. Yeah. It's just the ending is a really kind of Flemish ending, like CKX.
Okay, yeah.
And then when you say like Eddie Merckx, people are like, oh yeah, of course, yeah.
Yeah, if you're wondering why I'm struggling with it, if you look at how it's spelt, it's not, it doesn't roll off the tongue.
No,
I bet you've had this your whole life.
Well, since I moved to the UK.
When did you move here? When did you come here?
When I was 12.
When you were 12?
Yeah, my dad got a 9-year contract as a teacher in an international school.
Yeah.
So we all just moved across to the UK, and it was meant to be 9 years for my parents and myself, but I just ended up staying, really.
Right.
I liked it.
Right. Yeah. So do you speak Flemish?
Yeah, that's my mother tongue. Yeah.
Call me like a in Flemish.
Oh, and I've got to think. There's no real direct translation for that, but yeah. You're putting me on the spot. I don't want to swear at you in Dutch. I could say, well, I don't know. You talked about moederneuker, but it's not a term that we kind of use, really. So
that sounded good.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Anyway, let's get on to what you're all about, because we want to talk about rider resilience.
Sure.
It's your new what would you call it? A campaign or?
Yeah,
platform. It's a platform, really. Tell us what rider resilience is and how you got there. There's a lot in that.
Yeah, totally.
So let's go there. Let's start at the deep end.
Yeah, so rider resilience set up officially probably about a month ago now. It's effectively
early days.
Yeah, super early days. It's it's a community movement to try to inspire people to turn to the bike during times of hardship. And I suppose it's been built off my own kind of backstory. So I was diagnosed with incurable bowel cancer 5 years ago. And I've been through, you know, loads and loads of different bits of treatment, like various surgeries, chemotherapy, radiotherapy, the lot, like the whole package. But throughout that time, I always think riding bikes has been like the strongest medicine nearly for me. So just getting out on the bike has always given me that mental clarity, you know, during times when you're really struggling trying to kind of file everything that's going on, and you know, you might have that scanxiety thing, like leading up to some scan results, just getting out and pedaling.
Scanxiety,
yeah. It's like one of those terms that you don't hear about until you're in that little world.
Right.
But it's been massive. Mm. And I'm a massive believer that, you know, bikes are medicine in their own right and a real tool to heal. But actually, you know, that's one story, and cancer and kind of, you know, physical health is one thing. Mm. But if you look at how bikes affect other people, it actually resonates with so many other folk who are going through hardship. And it could be mental hardship, you know, depression, for example, or it could be addiction. It could be even now, like human displacement, people actually being forced to leave their house because of a war, to leave everything behind and arriving somewhere new with nothing. And actually the bike gives them that independence again, and like helps to restore a little bit of normality.
Right. Yeah.
So there's like different stories that we want to tell, and actually it all boils down to, if you're going through some tough times in life, the bike is a really, really strong tool, and sharing that message and inspiring as many people as possible.
That's an amazing message. I mean, it resonates with me obviously because I've been on a bit of a journey too, and getting back to bike riding was a, you know, a big part of my, I guess, rehabilitation to what I would have considered normal life, because I rode the bike a lot. But how did you realise that? Did you know that before your diagnosis, or did you go for a period where the bike got dropped away and then it came back, or what?
Yeah, totally. I mean, I started when I started chemotherapy. So effectively I had a surgery to remove that kind of like the primary tumour, if you like, and then had various scans, and it showed that it'd kind of gone to my liver and what's called the peritoneum, which is this membrane that surrounds all of your organs. So it kind of spread into two pretty tricky places to treat. And they basically said, look, you're fit and young. We're going to wipe the floor with you here. Like, we're going to give you pretty much like the harshest chemo we can give you just to see what we can do. And it made me think, well, I'm not going to be riding bikes for a good while. We'll get through this chemo and then we'll see what happens. And then to kind of complicate matters, it was a really good thing for me. My little boy was born sort of three cycles into starting chemotherapy. And that was just a massive distraction, because obviously there's all of that going on. And I didn't ride bikes. Then I went to Kendal Mountain Festival in 2017, there was bike night on, and there were two people there. One of them was you, and one of them was Andy McKenna.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. But Andy McKenna was showcasing his film, which was This Way Up. And that kind of showed him, I I suppose like the sort of the real suffering of multiple sclerosis and that kind of degenerative journey.
Yeah.
But still riding bikes. And really the message was like, I'm not letting my disease or my illness dictate how I live my life.
Mm.
And then you were on stage and you had a very similar message, obviously with a different slant.
Mm.
And I came away so inspired thinking, you know what? Sod this. Like, I'm going to just, I'm going to live my life how I want to live my life, and I'm going to ride my bike again. So
right.
The next weekend, got a few friends involved and, started pedaling. And it was, you know, lungs were screaming, legs were burning, like the whole lot. But afterwards, already I could tell, like, there's so much, that it gave me so much energy that I had way more longevity than anything else that I'd been kind of trying or anything like that. So I thought, well, I need to build this up gradually. And I got to the point where I went into, you know, full-blown remission, so there was nothing to be found. And I actually think cycling would have been a part of that, just getting the blood flowing
and,
you know, getting your mind sorted and getting that positivity back. So I had 8 months of no treatment. And then at the time, there was like a community film challenge project to create films. And I made this little mini Shreddit, if you want to call it, called Rider Resilience, which was a few friends of mine who'd also been through a cancer journey. We're all riding bikes.
Yeah.
And, you know, shot it. It was okay, but it went down really, really well and ended up being shown at Kendall Mountain Festival in 2018. And the reception I got then, I thought, wow, I should maybe make this into something bigger, because I thought I was just creating some inspirational ripples. And actually at that event, there was like a standing ovation and it was insane. Like Rob Warner even was buzzing, and it was this amazing kind of experience. But at the time, it was also a decision like, well, I can see this getting pretty big.
Yeah.
And time is so valuable. Like, where do you put your time? Like, I'm still, I mean, one of the things I was really conscious of is I was working in the bicycle industry. I was trying to establish a cycling division for a distributor.
Yeah.
And there was a lot on. And the last thing I wanted to do was work all day, you know, have like a big day at work, close that laptop, open another laptop and start the Rider Resilience Project in the evening.
That's a lot.
And just sideline my family and not really focus, or not even go riding and then have treatment at the same time.
Mm.
So I sort of decided to park the idea for a while, and I kind of built the website in the background. And then about 6 weeks ago now, I ended up with quite a lot of pain, like in the pelvis and like radiating into my legs when I came back from our summer holiday. So I had some scans and they basically said, well, the treatment that you're on is no longer working. So we need to switch it up, move to something different. But the treatment you're going on isn't like one of these really harsh ones that's there to like really attack it. It's there to sort of control things.
Right.
And normally I don't dig too deep because I'm a bit like, let's just carry on, and normality is key. It gives me that focus. But I thought, well, if time isn't on my side anymore, which I suppose it's never been, but if you're looking at a shorter time frame, like kind of need to know where I'm at and things that I want to achieve in life, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And the whole Rider Resilience thing was definitely something that I thought I want to kickstart and just get off the ground if I can. So they said, well, you're kind of looking at months now rather than years. That's not to say it couldn't go into a year or maybe a year and a half, maybe 2 years. You don't know.
You don't.
Everyone reacts differently to these things. But it really sharpened the mind. And I had this half-built website. I had an Instagram channel with like 300 followers. And I just put a message out there saying, look, I'm going to start this project. Here's the website. It was a bit of a dead end, but it told my story, told what we'd sort of set out to do. And pushed this story out. And it just went pretty viral. Like loads of people shared it. And my following went from 300 to nearly 3,000 over the course of a couple of days. And stories started flowing in about people's own journey and how, you know,
other people's stories.
Other people, yeah, they started emailing in.
Mm-hmm.
And loads of people asking, like, where can I donate? I really want to, like, you know, pay back. And this is amazing what you started. So, yeah, that kind of kickstarted it, really. But then we always wanted to do merchandise and various things and build that movement out, so it shows it's not just about, hey, it's Nils's cancer journey with a community movement attached to it. It's actually about the whole community, and it needs to speak to everyone in the bicycle industry. So I've kind of been working on that a lot in the background, and then the official launch is this Friday now, so we'll have some merch available to buy straight away, some merch on pre-order. But it's a much, I mean, the actual movement has been set up as a proper business now, you know. It's not just an idea or concept anymore. So we're kind of getting there. I'm going to say that's a long story short, but that's just a long story to get to where we are.
It's incredible to hear your story though. I mean, it blows my mind because obviously I can't really put myself in your shoes. I can't really understand what it must be like to have that kind of news and that reality that you've just explained. But to see your, I suppose the bit that's really amazing to see from, like, watching you do it is that the focus is like this radar focus on, like, oh, this is actually really important, and like, and to give it the time, like you said, time's important.
Yeah.
I mean, time's important anyway
to everyone.
But yeah, to see that sort of like the laser focus on, actually, this could be really important for a lot of people, not just, like you said, not just your cancer story.
Sure.
This is like sort of everyone's, it's every rider's story. They just don't necessarily know how important it is, but you found out.
Yeah, of course.
for others that, man, this can be the difference. Do you think it's, I don't know if, how I would word it, but has riding lengthened your life, do you think?
I think without a doubt, yeah.
Do you? Really?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And you'll never be able to quantify it.
Yeah, I guess you can't ever know.
No. But I mean, even like when I went into remission, that was kind of unheard of. So there was what's called a metastasis in the liver, which is secondary growth, so it's spread to the liver.
Mm.
And because it was also in another area, I wasn't eligible for surgery to cut it out, because the idea is, well, you go in and you cut out one part, you've got to recover from that, and the other part can then kind of spiral out of control because you can't have chemotherapy whilst you recover from surgery. So it's really difficult to do both.
Right.
So I just had effectively chemotherapy and bike therapy, getting out and riding, and flushing the system, and, you know, actually getting that mental space back. And that metastasis disappeared completely, which they were all absolutely amazed by, and that led me to go into, you know, remission effectively.
Wow.
So yeah, I mean, I think there's.
Did you feel like you were like Superman at that moment? You're like,
oh, I couldn't believe it. It's
solved everything.
Yeah. But then you hope it stays that way, obviously. Yeah, so yeah.
Hey, this is life, man. It doesn't go like that.
No, life just comes and kicks you.
It doesn't
you
go like that.
In all the wrong places.
Has no one told you?
Well, I'm learning still, obviously.
Yeah. Poor young Jack there, he doesn't know. It's terrible life, honestly.
I think it's made a huge difference. I think the power of the mind is not to be underestimated either. Yeah. You know, if you can actually, if it helps you to really kind of rationalize your thoughts and what I found with riding a lot of the time is, you know, more so than like walking or just getting outside, is there's way more going on because you're riding a technical trail and you've got to brake at the right time, stay upright, pick your line choice. You just can't think about all the rubbish stuff in your life that's going on.
Yeah.
And it's just a time to be able to switch off. And I think that's so important for people.
Yeah, I mean, getting out on your bike gives your mind space, doesn't it, to work, to actually work, like, and do what it's supposed to do, to evaluate your situation and to digest either information or just stress. But that's where it's really important for every rider, isn't it? It's so easy to be a bike rider and not realise what it's doing for you beyond having some fun. And I guess that's what you want to focus in on, isn't it? Because as much as there's what I would, you know, yours is a very big story and a very powerful one. And almost like the archetype of what we're talking about. But that story is actually happening to everyone, because life is, what we've all discovered, especially through lockdown, is very stressful. And riding bikes is actually way beyond going out and doing a really nice whip, or, you know, clearing a double, or hitting a trail. It's actually really important. There's a value to it that maybe we don't need if we don't need to know it, is great.
Mm.
But it is also great to know actually you're doing something amazing for your body and for your mind, and it can be as powerful as you're saying.
Yeah. I mean, we'll never, like you say, we'll never quantify it, but yeah, I think there's merit to a lot of people. And for me, you know, when I get messages of people saying like, on a normal day it's raining and I'm thinking, I'm not going to get out, and actually I've had a pretty rubbish week at work, and it nearly kind of absorbs half of their weekend, because they thought, I won't go for a ride because I can't be bothered to do all the kind of maintenance stuff afterwards, too much faff.
Yeah.
But then they stumble across like one of my posts and go, you know what? put that cup of tea away.
Yeah, get
go out and ride, and they come back and they just feel elated, and actually suddenly the week's sort of been turned around. That to me is like instant gratification for just those little inspirational ripples making people go, yeah, sod it, let's pick the bike up. Yeah. And it doesn't need to be a big bike ride. I mean, some people, you know, just going out, pack like a little coffee making kit or something, ride for 20 minutes, go and sit down, make a coffee, watch the sun.
I like that. That's a nice sun movie. Idea.
Yeah, totally. But like, what I'm trying to say is like, it doesn't always need to be like a big ride. You can just go out for a spin.
Just go out for a bit of a spin. Yeah. What's a typical ride for you? Because you live in the lakes, so it's beautiful.
Yeah, sure.
An amazing space.
Yeah.
So what's a normal bike ride for you? What's the normal bike riding day look like?
Yeah, definitely. If I'm lucky, I'll try to get out really early. So I absolutely love getting out for like sunrise and trying to kind of extend my day as much as I can. I love the light as well around that time of day. Mm-hmm. So it'll include a pretty big hill normally. So a lot of the time it's like a big up and down in the lakes for us. The nice thing where we live is I suppose it's like that anywhere, but we've kind of got two layers, haven't we? Like if you've got a really nice day and it's settled, we'll go quite high up and kind of push ourselves into that kind of more mountainous terrain.
Yeah.
But then if it's like a bit rubbish, then you can stay in the valleys and link up loads of little trails. So,
yeah.
I mean, for me, it'd probably be about 2 or 3 hours. I slow things down nowadays a little bit, take a camera and try to get some photos as well, because I find combining that photography and riding, it then also helps to extend the feel-good vibes from that ride.
Yeah,
so it kind of goes a little bit longer.
Did you have photography as a passion before, you know, this period in your life, or is this a new, is it?
Yeah, I probably started when I was about 18, 19, I got my first camera, got really into it, but it was more to document. I did a lot of long distance trekking at the time, like that was kind of my thing, and then got really into rock climbing. So it was always about documenting the adventures. So that's always been a big part of it. Then it kind of moved to bikes. But in terms of doing it seriously, it's probably the last 2 years where you make a proper commitment that you're taking a big camera body with you pretty much every time. And you think, it's there, because there's no point in saying, I've got a camera at home, look at that view. But you can't document it. So, probably a couple of years ago, I started doing it a bit more properly. And then in the last year, or thereabouts, I've started submitting some of those images to magazines as well.
Right.
And again, that's part of the reason why this all kind of came about, because you put a little blurb in why I was riding there and what the story behind that kind of picture is.
Yeah.
And you get, just the general public, random people you've never heard of, just reaching out via Instagram saying, this is amazing, you've inspired me. And you think, again, we need to do more of this.
Yeah. And suddenly you've got a lovely magazine feature out of. So I've always thought this about riders who do photography, right? Because Doddy, our GMBN tech guy, right?
Yeah.
He is a fabulous photographer, which I don't know if many people know that about Doddy, but he's an incredible photographer. And he's like yourself. When he goes out for a ride, he's always stopping and taking photos, right? And I went for a ride with him the other day and he was, I've got to get this shot. And I was like, I didn't mind. I had a rest. Great. But I was like, when do you look at all these photos? You must take thousands and thousands of photos. What do you do with them?
Yeah.
Do you sit, where do you have, because to watch, look at those photos, you almost need the same amount of time you use to do the ride to then stop and look at the photos.
Yeah. You get.
When do you, if you just got loads of photos you don't look at, I'm sort of half looking at Jack here because he's kind of the same.
You get quite ruthless at purging the bad ones. So you get your photos in, and then it's a matter of no. Oh yeah, no. And then you get through all the dross, and then it's the good ones that you kind of pick out. But if I look at like my mum, for example, she'll be like photo from everywhere, every angle, and just keep them forever. And you think, you'll never look at them.
Yeah,
you've got to be pretty ruthless at cutting it down to the good stuff, and do that sooner rather than later.
So many. Do you like take a photograph in RAW and then work on it?
It depends on what we're shooting. If it's just like more like snapshotty things, then I won't bother with all the kind of like post editing. But if we're doing something with potential for, magazine or something that you kind of want to print, then we'll always raw it up and spend a bit more time.
I went out for a ride the other day in Margam Park, which is right next to me. Really cool little spot. And I went into the park quite late in the evening, so there was nobody about. And there's this really cool set of steps that come down from sort of the main house. And I thought, I'll do a little bit of video of me riding down these steps. But I didn't have anything but my phone. So I tied my phone to a tree with my coat and pressed record and then went off and did a few laps of it. And I hadn't turned the camera around.
Oh no, so you filmed the tree.
I just filmed the tree for like 30 minutes. With me getting loads of like jumps off these steps. I really nearly crashed on one of them as well. Oh. I really tried hard. But yeah, so I don't do that very often. Anyway, I digress. It's a hard question. What did you do when you had your diagnosis? And I hope it's okay to ask this, but what does that week, month, what happens in that week? Does it stop you in your tracks, or do you, what was the emotion, the emotional reaction to it? Is it like defeat, or is it fight, or is it cut? What, is that possible to explain?
Yeah, I think so. I saw the overriding memory I've got from that time was that it felt effectively like my worst nightmare, but that I'd actually dreamt that whole conversation with the specialist about being, you know, where we were at. And I just remember, you know how like sleep heals, you wake up and you kind of forget about some stuff, and I'd wake up and be like, oh, I feel quite great. And then you'd suddenly think, oh, I actually know I've got incurable cancer. Like, did I dream that? Was that real? Oh, and it took a little while to kind of, I think, accept that it was real. And then, yeah, I think I surprised myself in terms of how you then start to deal with it. I think there was quite a lot of cancer in my family. So, like, my grandma and, well, basically three, well, no. Yeah, all four of them have now had cancer. So you think, oh, I've kind of seen them wither away with that disease, and it was always in the back of my mind. It was a big nightmare of mine to get something like that. And then at this age as well. But then you think, well, this, you know, I liken it to a game of cards. You just get dealt your hand of cards of life, and then you can do, I suppose, one of three things. You could go all in and just go a bit mad and have a list of this is what I want to do before I die, and at the expense of maybe burning that candle at both sides, both ends.
Yeah, because you've got to manage it.
You've got to manage it. Or you just go, fold, not for me. Like, you know, people that I speak to sometimes in hospital are just like so negative, and they're like, oh, that's it, isn't it? You know, I'm not like that. I'm kind of in the middle where you go, okay, well, this is a rubbish hand. How creative can we be with this? What can we do with this? And how can we get the most out of it? So that's sort of the game I've found myself playing. And I must admit, I've surprised myself by my own positivity at times. I'm not trying to blow smoke up my own backside, but it was just carrying on. And I think having a young family and things like just having bought a house and having a mortgage up to the hill, it was like, again, focused the mind of like, well, I need to build a bit of a financial legacy. I can't just be like, I'm not working anymore, go on to benefits. So effectively, in a lot of ways, try to carry on with life in as normal a fashion as I could in between chemo and, you know, surgeries and all that sort of stuff. And weirdly now, I sometimes say, oh, if I look back at the last 5 years, it's not been that bad. I've done loads. Like, I taught my kids to ski, and people look at me and they're like, what? Like, how's that not been bad? You've had like harsh chemo every 2 weeks, which has wiped you out for a week. And then in between, you're doing all this other stuff. But you're telling me it's been all right.
Yeah.
It's nuts.
That is crazy. When we were chatting, because we've done a chat on Rider Resilience itself, which was really good fun. But I remember you telling me in that chat about how the chemo has its effects, but there's been a couple of rides where you've gone and you felt almost a little bit like, how can I say it, a bit juiced up.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like where your mates are like, Jesus, what are they giving you in the hospital, right?
Fully, yeah, I mean...
Oh, like, actually, you were quicker.
Yeah, oh, totally. I mean, part of what I went through was a stage of like, well, the body's let me down, I need to punish the body. So I spent a lot of time on a turbo, got really fit. But then, you know, there's no denying it. If I went and like, entered like a competitive race, well, they wouldn't let me because I'm full of steroids. And they must make a difference on the climb, surely. Like if you're just like buzzing on steroids, just flying off. But my mates were, they were convinced I wasn't getting chemo. I was just getting this like highly refined doping regime straight into my arteries.
Oh my God, that's so funny.
If only, eh?
Yeah, but then I guess it's got the downside.
Oh, absolutely.
It must do you in. Like, was it just like make you completely knackered or?
Yeah, so the best way to describe it for me, and I know everyone's different, but it'd feel like a really bad hangover. But, you know, with a hangover, you can sort of go, I'll get up, get out, do something. Mm. Didn't really work. Like, I'd force myself to get up and get out, and I'd be pushing my bike up like Skidore or something. And,
yeah.
And think, what am I doing here? Like, I just feel like it just, you just need time, basically, for your body to go. You've been poisoned. And, you know, you can try to accelerate as much as possible, but you've effectively burnt off a load of cells, good and bad, and your body needs to rebuild it. So you do end up pretty wiped out off the back of it.
I suppose you don't think about those good ones too, isn't it?
Yeah, unfortunately, it does both. And then you just hope that the good ones grow back and the bad ones don't. Yeah.
What would you say since your diagnosis and your riding now, are you more or less risk averse? I guess you're managing an awful lot of things when you're out riding that you didn't have to manage before.
Yeah.
So are you more gung ho now, or like are you like suddenly become like,
I think it's
go for it?
I think it's sort of, it's progressed throughout my journey. Like, I think initially, I didn't have, I mean, I've got like an ileostomy now, effectively like a bag, which I've had for probably about 3/5 of this journey.
Yeah.
But initially, you know, I had the primary surgery. Yes, I had a line in my arm for the chemo drugs, but beyond that, you couldn't really see I was any different, really, apart from maybe a skin rash. And I was pretty strong, so I didn't ride any differently. And even though I maybe should have, because, you know, if you break a bone, then you're having to come off chemo, and actually your bones heal a lot worse when you have had chemo, when you're on active treatment. But I just find it really difficult when you get to the top of an amazing trail to just be on the anchors more. You just enjoy that that descent, don't you? You kind of get carried away
a little bit.
But then more recently, I suppose riding has become more about the journey, because I do think, well, as much as, you know, it'd be a good way to go if you had a bad crash mountain biking and do what you love.
Trust me, it's not.
You're still here. But if you like absolutely wipe yourself out, you know, doing what you love, that would be great. But actually, when you've got, you know, in my case, I've got two bits of bowel hanging out the front of my body. You don't want to. You don't want to nick them and end up sort of, having to stem the blood flow.
Well, I guess it's a certain level of like unnecessary.
Totally.
Yeah. So when you say it's become more about the journey, is your riding, has your style of riding changed?
I'd say so. I think initially, I mean, if I look back now, I like to think of myself as more of like a playful rider, like popping off things left, right, like that kind of riding. You know, never big jump sort of thing. That wasn't really my thing. But nowadays it's more like, oh, let's just go and have a journey through the mountains. And I'll definitely be more cautious. But then I think it's also because you know your own ability, you know what you can and can't ride. And since I was diagnosed, I've lost 2 stone. And a lot of that is muscle as well, so the core strength just isn't there. So you just ride differently, you know. Yeah. Plus, I'm riding a semi-fat e-bike, which, frankly speaking, is still heavier than a normal bike, so it doesn't pop off stuff as easily. I'm definitely more of a plower, anyway. Just getting out still. Yeah. Still like going fast. I can't really stop myself from doing that.
So what is the bike you're riding now?
So at the moment, I'm on an Orbea Rise M10. Yeah.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
I'm trying to picture that one.
So it's basically,
That's the e-bike it's got 60 newbies of torque, not the full.
Oh, so like the lightweight.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. So it's effectively like, well, for me, it's like a one-trick pony because I can shoulder it. It's light enough for me to carry up some rock steps, over stiles, all that sort of stuff. But for me, it's like it gives me that safety net. If you know, if I've blown my own batteries, I've got something to kind of fall back on.
Yeah.
But it does ride very much like an analog bike, which I really enjoy. So it's effectively got the normal EP8 motor, but it's just been down-specced a little bit.
Neil has that, doesn't he?
Blake has it.
And Blake has it. Yeah, they like that bike.
I really enjoy it.
So, have e-bikes become quite important then? Is that like a big change for you?
Yeah. If I'm brutally honest, like initially I was a little bit skeptical. There's a lot of people in the lakes who ride e-bikes. They're probably a little bit overweight and they'll suddenly get up to trails which would have been a natural selector beforehand, like a big climb, and they can ride all the way to the top.
Yeah.
But then you see them go down and it's the mass of the rider sometimes, the mass of the bike itself, not actually taking the corners and braiding a lot of the trail, so like causing extra erosion. And I struggle with that a bit because it's such a pristine landscape in a lot of ways steeped in history. I mean, even myself, I'm at the top of like Sehel Velin and I can hear that kind of whine of the motor. I'm a bit like, oh yeah, I feel like I'm a little bit out of place with all this tech so high in the mountains. But then if it enables me and people like me to get out where I otherwise probably wouldn't have. And actually my recovery at times have been way quicker because I've got that electrical assist. And I think, what a time to be alive.
Yeah, right.
And so, like, you know, Andy McKenna literally just launched a film about 2 weeks ago on the Shimano channel. And it was all about how e-bikes allow him to keep riding and keep smiling and stuff like that. And I'm totally behind that. I think they've definitely got a place. I think that semi-fat category is really, really exciting because I think... Yeah, it still makes people pedal. It's not just like, you know, here's your, you don't just get everything for free, if that makes sense, and just, you know, plow up climbs and things like that. So
yeah, I mean, those bikes are really fascinating. And I'm really intrigued by where we're going to end up because those bikes are the first point where the two fractions of e-bike and analog bikes have started to meet.
Yeah.
And I always think about a bike 10 years from now that will be the mountain bike, and there won't be two ends of the scale. They'll just be what they're like.
Yeah.
And where it will be is quite interesting, but I think those lightweight bikes are sort of very much along the line of like, all right, this is what a mountain bike can do. And I guess some people will never accept it. I don't know, but...
Yeah, I think it will be... We'll get to a point where it'll be very difficult to say that something is an e-bike. You'll look at it and be like, it's like a motor in it, doesn't it? I don't know.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's already hard to tell on some of them.
Well, the new Trek, that Fuel XE, that's come out.
Looks
you look
nice,
at it and you think,
it? Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah, I like that.
Is that an e-bike? I don't know.
And that's totally silent as well. Yeah. So that makes a big difference.
Yeah, so for me, that would tick that kind of high mountain box where you don't hear it whirring away.
Yeah.
And I can at least switch off from that.
I like the little whir of the motor because I've got a hand bike, but that's using a traditional Bosch e-bike motor.
Sure.
And I like the little whir of the motor.
Because you know it's kicking in.
Nah, just because it's like, feels a bit moto, really. And
okay.
I come from a motorcycle background.
Yeah.
That's how I ended up in mountain biking.
Yeah.
What's your route into cycling? What's...
Being Belgian, I suppose, everyone just rides bikes everywhere. Like, that's like growing up, that's how you get to school, that's how you get around. Like, what is it? Like 80% of journeys under 8 kilometres over there is done by bike. So we all just ride bikes everywhere. Because the cycling infrastructure is so good, you don't worry about helmets and faffing about. You literally just hop on your bike in your normal day-to-day kit and off you go. So bikes have always been a big part of my life.
Yeah.
But then it wasn't until, realistically, I moved to the lakes. It was me and my other half, Laura, who said, oh, there's like a trail centre here where you can hire mountain bikes. And we just done a ski season together. That's where we met. Snowboarding has always been a big part of my life. And, like riding... mountain bike trails had a lot of similarities to snowboarding, like picking line choices, the speed, the adrenaline.
Yeah.
I just hooked straight away, so that was that, and then just became massively obsessive with it, and very much on the mountain bike side of things.
But right.
Because there was no snow where we live now, it was that, for me, it was like a substitute to finding that adrenaline, getting that mountain time in.
Yeah.
And I just absolutely loved it. So what would that be now? Be about... 12 years ago now that I really got into mountain bikes.
Yeah. What's your bike journey? What's the bike brand journey? You can tell a lot from a rider. What bike did they have?
Like... It's difficult when you work in the industry. You flick around like a yo-yo, literally.
Yeah.
So I can buy one at trade, get rid of it. So
if
I'd give you the list,
it's a long list.
Like from...
Got a favourite?
Well, I could say I'm biased because we work with a bike brand called Salsa in the UK through work. And... they've got such an incredible mountain bike heritage, obviously.
Mm.
When they went back into doing full-size mountain bikes, which were, I'm going to call them, in line with the rest of the market, because at a stage where they were doing more kind of bike packing rigs.
Yeah, yeah.
They had a bike called the Horse Thief, and I came off a Santa Cruz Hightower, which I absolutely loved. And when on brand, when they launched these new bikes, and I went down to a 140 front, 120 rear, do-it-all bike.
Mm.
And that bike I very much bought for a transalpine trip. Like, that was the idea. Like, I was going to... train on that and then plan this journey from Garmisch to Les Gardes.
Right.
Nice. I was in a pretty good place at the time. I thought, in between chemo, we'll have a break, we'll go and ride that. And that was my bike of choice because it pedaled incredibly well. And actually it was so fun to descend on because it was a bit under traveled, and I enjoyed that riding a lot. So that was the last bike I had before I went to a specialized Levo SL, so my first semi-fat e-bike.
Yeah.
And then it went on to the Rise. But I love that bike. It was super lightweight, and I just had these amazing adventures in my mind to do with that.
Yeah.
It never worked out. It's just, again, life kicking you in all the wrong places at the wrong time.
So I got a feeling, did Salsa Is that the brand? They used to sponsor the MBUK team really early on.
Yeah, yeah.
So
all the
JMC would have rode.
Correct. Absolutely. Yeah, with all the
sort of flecky colours.
Chili peppers.
On.
Yeah, they have like multicoloured, well, Rastafarian kind of.
Yeah. I know the brand. Yeah. That's pretty cool. Have you got, so rider resilience. Let's come back to that a second, because obviously there's the platform, which is, I guess, the starting point of the website. Like you said, it launches this Friday. Yeah. So as we're talking, we're about to film a Dirt Shed show after this, which I'm really looking forward to, with Steve Jones.
Mm, yeah.
Oh, my God. hold tight. Right, so we're going to do that, and then that will be coming out on the day you launch Rider Resilience for real, which is great. I love that. And I didn't know that, actually, so I've just learned that in this podcast. But you're also doing a film.
Yes.
So that's going to be almost like a place where people are going to learn to understand really about where this is going.
Yeah.
So how far into that are you? And is this sort of like the pro version of that original film?
Yeah, to an extent. I mean, the original film was kind of like self-shot. It was a bit of a little mini project.
Yeah.
But when I did the kind of, I'm going to call it like the soft launch initially, I probably had about 6 or 8 different filmmaking agencies reach out saying, let's make this into a film because it's a really poignant story and I'd love to tell it. And it got me thinking, that's a great idea. I really want to do that, but I don't want it to just be about me and Rider Resilience. It wants to be bigger and broader and, again, touch a lot more types of adversity. Mm. And I also thought, well, I'm going to get one shot at this. So let's connect with some creative agencies who I've worked with through work.
Yeah.
Who I know when they launch something, the world effectively, especially the cycling community, sits up and takes notice. And we'd worked quite a bit with Sam Needham previously, just through work with some projects that we'd run.
Yeah.
So I kind of know him personally, and obviously started working with Steel City recently. Mm. And then a guy called Jacob Gibbons at Aspect Media reached out as well, who's incredibly well connected and creates some amazing stuff.
Yeah.
And those guys do a lot of stuff together anyway. Mm. And they both sort of said, like, we'd love to run it, we'd love to kind of spearhead it together. And they're super chilled about it. They're like, funding, don't worry, we will sort it. Like, we get your stuff filmed and this film is going to happen. So it's been really nice to sort of start working with them.
So here's a question. How is Rider Resilience funded? And then what's the plans with funds that you raise? So talk us through that.
Yeah, so I mean, there's a few different revenue streams. I mean, the most obvious one that's going at the moment already is just donations. So it's a really crude way, I suppose, of supporting it. But there's a lot of people who want to help and don't really know how to help, and just giving, even £20, £30, it makes a huge difference. So we've had a huge amount of donations come in already, just people wanting to get this project off the ground, which has been huge.
Yeah.
The next thing then will be merchandise. So we're going to be selling T-shirts, caps, like some, laser edge flasks and stuff like that. Hopefully some really cool collab limited edition stuff with some brands as well. Down the line. So that will be like a bit of a constant, but with things kind of changing over quite regularly, keeping things fresh.
Yeah.
We've got obviously the YouTube channel, which as it grows perhaps can be monetized at some point, when we get to a certain point with that.
Yeah.
Add a little bit of money coming back into the bank. And then, one of the big things is actually corporate sponsorship. So we're talking to a number of brands at a pretty high level about doing, kind of like annual or if not, multi-year sort of support packages.
That's fantastic.
It's been really, really well received. Some of the conversations I've had, I thought we'd be having to push quite hard and sell quite hard, but they're like, actually, no, this is exactly where we want to be. We want to spend more money on kind of investing back into the community. It matches our ethos of what we're trying to do in the next few years.
Yeah.
So it's been incredibly exciting. And now we're just kind of working out the nitty-gritty with those brands, and it'll allow us to do a huge amount.
Yeah. And what is the plans with the funds? Like, how are you going to target that to?
Yeah, so there's two things, really. I mean, one of the things, we're very much telling people's stories. So going out and documenting, people riding, people who are going through some times of hardship, have a really important or poignant story to share.
Yeah.
I can't do it all. Yes, I've got the ability maybe to do some film work, but I can't do it all myself. I need to get filmmakers across the country, even across the world, to go and document that stuff so we can pull it together and we can share those stories. And that's going to cost us money. We don't expect that to be for free. So there's a huge amount where we need to reinvest back into the business to tell those stories and to kind of carry on growing and create that inspirational library. I'm still talking to brands about corporate partnerships, but the film is kind of part of that. You know, it's going to be more kind of on a on like an annual basis sort of thing, connect with brands, because again, they can help spread the word and the message. But at the moment, we're kind of talking to a variety of people who whose story is really strong and will be good in front of the lens. We don't want it to be, oh, I've got cancer and I maybe only have months, and somebody else, I'm paralysed. It's like, actually, it wants to be a really uplifting, film that touches a lot of people, which we think it, it really will be, because, frankly, we're all still riding bikes and we're coming back beaming, you know, whenever we get out. And I just think, you know, if, when we're working with folk like that, again, it'll create a bit of a wake of inspiration. It'll be there forever, you know, for people to watch. And if somebody stumbles across it in years to come, great. But I think it's something that we can show at like outdoor adventure film festivals as well, where, it's not a bike festival, but lots of people have bikes. They don't see themselves as bikers necessarily, or cyclists, whatever you want to call them. But one day they might think, you know what, I'm having a bit of a rubbish day, and they might remember that film and go and get that bike out of the shed and go for a spin. So we did a session on Monday with Jacob Gibbons. So he drove up, doesn't mind like a 4-hour drive just to come and see me in the lakes, drove up. He stayed with a local friend the night before. He turned up at 7 o'clock in the morning, and I was like getting the kids ready for school, filmed some of that. Then we went off to Borrowdale, rode a section there for most of the day, kind of broke it down. And then, yeah, went back to mine and did some talking head interview stuff. And, yeah, it finished at 7. We didn't have lunch. We had, like, 12 hours of filming. Jumps back in his car, drives home, and then the next day at 7 o'clock in the morning, he texts me saying, I'm at my desk editing some other stuff. For, I think it was for Canyon, actually, for their, you know, latest Kiss release or Chaos release.
What do you think about that?
I think it's always good to have, like, people pushing, you know, the kind of the tech side of things. Would I want it in my bike? Personally, no. I like the simplicity. I think, yeah, it's just something else for potentially for there to be like a rattle or something. And it's the same with like suspension forks. You get like the best of the best and you've got all these dials. I set it up once and don't really tend to fiddle around with it again.
Yeah,
like,
don't touch it too much.
Yeah, so I actually quite like the simplicity personally, but I can.
Makes a lot of sense. Coming from, let's say, from motorcycles, that's a... it makes a massive difference on a motorbike. In fact, it makes it some things rideable that weren't rideable. So,
is it quite common on motorcycles?
Yeah, well, a version, not necessarily exactly the same technology, but steering damping.
Right, okay.
So, I kind of get, I can get my head around it.
Yeah.
We'll talk about that. that more on the Dirt Shed show. What I really liked when you were telling me about rider resilience is I liked how you were recognising the bike almost like a form of medicine, almost like prescribing, making yourself prescribe yourself this medicine.
You have to get out.
Know, do it. Like, you need to take this three times a week.
Yeah.
And then let it, I don't know what the sort of period of time it is to really start to work. For, I feel like it would work quite quickly.
Yeah, oh, definitely.
But if there's someone... either listening to this or when they're looking at your stuff and they're thinking, maybe I need to, like you said, they might not be a bike rider.
Yeah, totally.
Maybe it's just that they need to like get the bike out the garage that's at the back they haven't ridden for 10 years and just prescribe themselves a week of, I'll go for 3 doses of bike riding a week and see what it does. Because it will do something, won't it?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's the key thing, isn't it? I mean, my only worry with like my own rides and documenting them is maybe people think, oh, I can't push up a mountain like that.
Yeah.
But you're able to scale it right back and just be like, you know what? I'm gonna go and ride out to the local woodland and, you know, take a packed lunch or something and just sit down and take out a bit of time and then pedal back. And it only needs to be, could be 20 minutes out, could be 10 minutes out, but just getting out and... change of scenery, getting the blood flowing, I think will make a big difference to a lot of people.
Yeah.
And I do genuinely hope that there will be some folk who start with that maybe once a week and then go, oh, I really enjoy that, do it twice a week, 3 times a week, and then go, you know what? I could actually leave my car at home and I could cycle to work. And then this whole project has, you know, like a knock-on effect on the environment as well, which is this happy kind of side effect, which I'm not necessarily aiming towards, but generally speaking, you know, more bums on saddles, as cliche as it sounds, is a great thing.
Yeah, it's no bad thing at all. Now, I've always found with my riding, This sounds really childish, but I've always found riding as like escapism. Mm. You know, like it was almost a way of like pretending the world's not like it is, even before I was in any situation like I'm in now. But when I was originally not a professional rider, but then when I became a professional rider, I'd better go out the front of my house and imagine things like curbs and bumps on a bit of grass and a little bit of rockery or whatever were things way bigger and way harder than they were. And I could imagine this almost like commentary in my head of like, I was always thinking about trials, so it would be something along the lines of like, okay, Martin Ashton's just got to the such and such section and he's going to try it now. No one's done it yet. So here he goes. And he's like, oh, and he's done it. He's the first. And then I'd make a mistake and go, actually, that wasn't Martin Ashton. Sorry. Martin Ashton's just arrived and I come around and I do it again. And I have this like narration in my head. But that's never gone away. That was when I was a younger rider and I was trying to be like wishing I was like one of my heroes. But it's never gone away. So recently I was in Whistler on an amazing hill and I had G Atherton behind me because we were riding down this bit of trail to then do a bit of shooting with G. And in my head, I can't really stop it. I'm suddenly like, and Ashton's got the lead and he's dropping G Atherton in his head and I've got all this stuff going on in my mind, like a Rob Warner thing or, I don't know, a Peter Purvis from Kickstart. That's a throwback for all the older people who are wondering what Peter Purvis reference is. Yeah, and I've got this like the imagination is sparked when I'm riding, and that escapism's like, well, how do you get there without being like into riding a bike? I don't know how you do it another way, but I can tap into something that just is not the real world.
Yeah, it's just
this like literally a playground.
Yeah,
playground for like what I do on my bike, but a playground in my mind, just. Anything goes. The examples I'm giving are like very obvious, but there's other ways it manifests in my head that I'm just like, I'm on a roller coaster because I've been thrown on the bike a certain way. And then, you know, so it is an amazing thing that when you go out on a bike, what you tap into is often so much more than the little map you've done on Komoot.
And then your stats afterwards.
Or what Garmin is telling you.
Yeah.
You know, that you've broken it down to the science, but the sort of the metaphysical thing that's happening around you it can be incredible.
Way bigger.
Yeah, it's a really fascinating thing to think about. And a bit trippy, I guess.
Yeah, it could be.
A bit trippy, you know, like a bit like... it's just one of those things you can never know what it's going to do for you until you just go out and do it. And the first thing is just go.
Yeah, definitely. For me, like, a big thing is...
What is your advice? Yeah, what is your advice to, like, someone who's... There's someone listening and they're struggling and they're like, yeah, but you're always a bike rider. So it's not that amazing an idea that you're going to carry on going out on a bike. But what's your advice to someone who's, like... hearing it and they're like,
I think you just have to go out and try it, wouldn't you? Mm-hmm. Like if you ride bikes and you've got access to a bike, even if you don't, I mean, you can go and hire one somewhere, you know, try it and don't aim too big, too far. Like just go out for a small ride. I mean, this is, you know, people who'll tune into this show will probably be into riding bikes in a bigger way already.
Probably.
Yeah. But, you know, if you might have people who just enjoy the podcast and actually haven't ridden that much in a little while. You know, they're in a bit of a dark place. It's like, yeah, that first step, I think, is the hardest, just getting yourself out. But how many times have you regretted going out and come back and been like, well, that was absolute... I mean, it does happen, but that was absolutely rubbish. Most of the time, unless you have, like, bad mechanical, it's pretty rare.
Yeah, that's very true, actually. Yeah, you don't often go out and it'd be terrible.
Mm.
I mean, I always find the best rides are the ones where you nearly didn't.
Oh, totally. Yeah.
They're usually I'm glad I went.
Yeah.
Outside, I really missed out. Something will happen, or it sets up your day in a way, or ends the day. I often ride later in the day, actually. I'm not like you're saying,
a dawn rider. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not amazing in the mornings. I need a bit of time in the day, and then I'll go out a bit later in the day, and some days is it getting a bit late? Should I go? And then you go, And you're like, oh my God, I'm glad I didn't miss out. Because that was so funny. Totally. Or something happens that you just couldn't have imagined. It's funny where it goes.
There's one ride that's like that really sticks in my mind like that, where I just had a really busy day and local mate of mine, photographer as well, James Vincent, got in touch. He was like, look at the cloud level. Like, I think we can get above it. And I thought, oh, I don't know, mate. Like, it's really high up. And if we want to get above it, it's going to be a lot of hard work.
Yeah.
And we might end up just being in the cloud, not actually getting anywhere near it. And it's going to take a lot of my energy, which I then have to recover from.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's one of those rides where I went, well, take the punt. And we went. And conditions were incredible. It was just... only the very tops of the mountains were poking out. Normally you get these inversions in the Lake District where like it's all in the valleys and a lot of mountains are kind of, you know, sticking out above the cloud inversion. But here it was just like anything above pretty much 800 metres. So it's like the Helvellyns of this world, the Skiddaws, etc. These islands in
and you'd
in
got
the cloud,
right above
and we'd
them.
Got right above them.
No way.
And then you descend down and above the cloud it was, you know, beautiful sunshine, warm, settled. You start heading down and you go into like this different... just a different climate,
world.
Effectively. Yeah. It gets wet initially because you're going through the cloud. Then under the cloud, it's just miserable, it's raining.
Yeah.
And you think, what was that?
So
it just
crazy.
Felt so trippy. Yeah.
How long is that ride? How long are you out for when you're doing something like that?
Oh, that was a good few hours. But both obviously with cameras, so we're messing about with the cameras for ages. So it was pretty much, we probably set off at 11-ish and didn't get back until 5 or so. So it was a bit of a yomp and a bit of an adventure, but well worth it.
Amazing. What's the sort of legacy you want for rider resilience? Mm. You know, there's going to be, let's think, 10 years from now, what could it be?
Well, it'd be really nice in an ideal world if, like, the logo and the vision and the kind of idea behind it is nearly like a household name within the bicycle community. Mm. So everyone's, you know, globally, so everyone has heard of it. And if you see somebody with the logo, you're straight away like, right, they're part of that community spirit, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
That would be the dream. It would mean that I've built a legacy which isn't just UK-based, it's actually touched a lot of people a lot further afield.
Yeah.
And that people have really bought into it as well, that they've gone like, you know what, it really resonates with me. I'm proud to wear that logo. You know, I want to wear it as a hat or a T-shirt.
Mm.
Or even if you don't wear any of the merchandise, you know, that you're part of that community spirit.
Yeah.
You might be helping out in a different way to it or whatever.
So
that would be the dream.
Yeah.
Initially at the moment, like if I get an email or a message from anyone saying they've been inspired, then that's instant gratification. So that is like, well, if it stops tomorrow, we've achieved something.
Yeah,
you know, we've inspired one person.
It's no mean feat, that's for sure. Well, you've definitely inspired me, that's for sure. In fact, the ride I went out on the other day, I was literally had watched our little chat, and I was like, I actually need to go out. I'm talking about going out on bikes. I need to go out on a bike myself. I went out for a bit of a ride, which was really cool.
Brilliant.
I guess the stories coming in from others is also, that's also really important, isn't it?
Yeah.
And probably quite eye-opening.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean,
have you got a favourite one? Is there one? I guess you can't say people's names, but...
No, I mean, there's...
Or is there a... I guess the mental health side of things is the most obvious thing that a lot of people are dealing with, isn't it?
Well, but also, because of my own story, I'm getting a lot of cancer stories coming in, you know, like people saying, I've gone through all of this.
Yeah.
And...
Big cancer fan base.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, I got a lot of spinal cord injury fans myself.
That's what happens, yeah. But I'm very conscious that I don't want to kind of go down that route too far, because there's loads and loads of exposure on the cancer side of things already anyway. And I don't want it to be like, oh, we raise money and give it to like, you know, Macmillan. That's not what it's about. It's for me, actually, the other stories are much, much more, carry a lot more gravitas, because they're not connected to what I'm going through, and I'm seeing like other adversity being resolved, not resolved necessarily, but you know, being addressed or being healed through the use of a bike. So one of the things, you know, is like a girl reached out to me and said, we've had real issues with fertility and actually trying to start a family, and you know, riding bikes hasn't solved the problem.
No.
But it's given us that mental capacity to deal with, like, you know, numerous miscarriages. And it's a subject that actually people don't really talk about. It's still a bit taboo for some reason.
Yeah, right.
But you think, you know what, actually that also would touch a lot of people if you said, well, you're going through that. Lots of people go through it, don't talk about it. Mm. Find that mental, you know, solace, find that mental space by using a bike, which is huge. And then I've had some incredible donations out of the blue. One guy donated £1,000 with no message. And I had a phone number and an email address. And I was like, I've got to ring this person because what's the backstory? How do you go, I really like this so much, I'm just going to give this guy a grant who I've never, ever come across, and I expect it to be A, legit, and go to all the right places. So I send a message saying, like, look, I'm absolutely humbled by your donation. Like, what's the backstory? And he said, well, his mum had late multiple sclerosis and ended up with, like, a stoma and a catheter as well. I haven't got a catheter, but, you know, it's something that's like a bit of a threat in the background. But she was catheterized. And then he went through a time of effectively depression, and using the bike helped him deal with those two at the same time.
Yeah.
And he said it resonated with me on so many different levels. It just seemed like a great thing to invest into. So that was that. No Amazing. Questions asked.
Amazing.
And it really kind of humbled me, like, wow, like, you know, that's touched somebody so much. They've gone, I want him to spread that word further and keep doing what he's doing. So that was incredible. Yeah, there was a girl who reached out who said she got close to taking her own life. She was working for the police service in child abuse, and just being confronted with that on a daily basis just got her down.
Heavy stuff.
So she took to riding bikes. She actually took to riding mountain bikes. She wasn't a mountain biker before, and that helped to get through that. Then, unfortunately, she got diagnosed with stage 3 breast cancer, had to go through that, then went into COVID and all the lockdowns, so couldn't see anyone. So she had a really rough time with it. And actually, the one constant that gave her that kind of clarity and stuff was riding mountain bikes. Amazing.
Like, it is incredible because it's
perpetuating.
Perpetuating. Is that the word?
You're asking a Belgian here, Mark.
Words aren't my strong point today. What's really interesting on that, on a journey like you've just explained then, of that girl going through lots of different problems, from the outside looking in, you think, well, how did she keep bothering to ride bikes through that? But the answer is actually she was able to because she kept going out on bikes, and that is the message,
completely,
isn't it?
Like, yeah.
It's like this consistent space.
Yeah.
Like, giving yourself that space is the trick. But it's so hard to, in hindsight, look back and go, God, how did you keep going? Like, I still think, how are you still riding? Because you've got all this weight of this diagnosis on your shoulders, which I'm sure is massive, but you seem to wear it very lightly. You seem to be able to, like,
brush it off.
Not brush it off, because you know, through our chats, you're clearly very focused and you understand where you are. But it isn't weighing you down, because you've got this realization of what you've discovered in your life through riding and the other sports you've done as well, I'm sure, is that it's so important. And it's sort of what we do. You've got to do, you know, you need to have something to point at. And if it's that mountain near you or that downhill ride, then that's going to achieve an incredible space in your life that you really need.
You make a valid point. I think for me, it's knowing what it gives me back when I do go out, and that's in terms of how I stay motivated to go out, it's just like I get to the point where I know I need to go out. I might even get a bit jittery and a bit agitated if I don't, because I think the mind just sort of struggles to.
I get a bit. I've had moments where Lisa said you should go on your bike.
Oh, exactly. Yeah.
Because
and when the other half,
you're getting a bit annoying now.
Because I'm going to make space. You can go and ride because I need good Neil's back. Like, okay. Yeah, it's that kind of time.
Yeah, there's a different me who comes back off a bike ride to one that
totally
beforehand. I get a little bit jittery.
Yeah.
And I need to get out.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, these days, you know, with the technology of the bikes, I can just go out for a ride now, which is a hand bike ride, admittedly, but it's still a really cool ride. And it makes such a massive difference. Burning those calories and getting to somewhere, you know.
Having that journey. Yeah, completely. Yeah.
So thank you, dude.
My pleasure.
Let's have a little break. We're going to go do a dirt shed show. which when you see it will be the launch day. So what we should definitely say is head over to riderresilience.org.
Yeah.
And check out the website and definitely check out the videos and look forward to the Rider Resilience film coming out soon. Dude, it's been great.
Thanks for your time.
Let's do the Dirt Shed Show.
Yeah, let's do it.
Nice.